Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off The Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're very welcome along. Joe Malloy with you this evening. So hang in there, Liverpool fans. Just 10 more league games to go until this nightmare is over. How many Champions League games may be the more interesting question right now. We'll talk to Mark Lawrenson this hour. Pat Nevin on the way after nine. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer developing a very handy habit of big results when things aren't going especially well, and yesterday more than qualifies. In the Pro 14, we have a Leinster-Munster showdown on March 27th. Meanwhile, this Sunday, Murrayfield beckons for Ireland. Keith Wood with us on Monday Night Rugby. We'll also hear from Ruth Bolton on the show this evening. She's on the latest Off the Bench podcast with Cliona Foley. Ruth is a two-time Olympic gold medalist with Team USA. She's also a two-time WNBA All-Star. We'll play that for you around 8:30 or so. 53106, the text number. We're at Off The Ball on Twitter, of course. Richie McCormack, evening.
Evening, Joe.
Adrian Barry, hello to you.
Evening, Joe. Richie.
So a few bits and bobs going on. I mean, the Liverpool situation's out of control, Adrian. Sixth consecutive defeat at Anfield. They're now at 8 defeats in their last 12 league games. Previously to reach 8 defeats, it took them 121 league games, no less. 8 defeats at home. You have to go back to the 1951-52 season for a worse season, but there's plenty of time to beat that record. No goals in 8 of their last 12 games. I mean, the stats just keep coming. What I'm trying to say, Adrian, what I'm trying to get across here is it's not good.
It's hard to know what to say about Liverpool or United today. Like, it's impossible to... What conclusions do you draw? I mean, the only thing you'd say about United is they're so all over the place, you don't know what you're getting from one week to the next. At least with Liverpool, there's some level of consistency there in that they're just brutal. Like, seem totally shorn of confidence. We were talking about it on Friday's OTBAM that, you know, if Virgil van Dijk and all the other injured players were to come back tomorrow morning, it's still going to take some time to get them... to get the mentality, as a former Republic of Ireland manager used to say, back on track. The enthusiasm seems to have disappeared out of them, Joe. And I think, to be honest, and like Klopp sort of said as much after the game yesterday, that like it's almost a case for them, obviously in terms of trying to win football matches again, can they right the ship even a little bit before the season is out so that it doesn't leak into next season?
Yeah. A lot of interesting things, really. Klopp's demeanour is very eye-catching. It's not the getting angry at Des Kelly sense of fight that he had, you know, a couple of months ago. He's looking defeated and low on energy, and he's had a difficult time off the pitch as well. And, you know, you just presume the whole thing has been very taxing. I think Richie, he has so much credit in the bank that things would have to keep going wrong for a very, very, very long time before anybody would be asking serious questions about his position. The worry for Liverpool fans might be that Klopp, free-thinking type that he is, man of honour that he is, might reach the conclusion himself that, you know what, I'm not going to overstay my welcome here. Maybe I'm not best placed for whatever reason to sort this mess out and might just walk away. You know, I don't think any Liverpool fan would want that. That's probably their biggest worry now this summer.
Yeah, that sense that the last year and everything that's brought with it, not in footballing terms, but in Klopp's especially, like he lost his mother, being away from home, not being able to attend the funeral, the fact that we're all living through a pandemic. I mean, that affects everybody in different ways, and people in football are no different as far as that's concerned. So he could have a recalibration moment and decide, yeah, listen, I want to take a year or two out, go back to Germany and then see how the land lies 18 months down the line after the Euros heading towards the World Cup with Germany. Who knows? But like, they'd have to lose every game 10-0 between now and the end of the season for Liverpool to pull the trigger. And what they do need to do is get the ship righted enough that they can pull off a couple of results in the Champions League, build that confidence to such a degree that, you know, they might be faltering in the league, but they could bludgeon their way. And we've seen them do it before. 2005 is the case in point. You can see them bludgeoning their way towards the latter stages of the Champions League, and then who knows what.
Yeah.
But the most important thing for them now is to get that preseason that every manager has bemoaned, and Klopp most especially. They need to have a break, go away, do what they need to do for, you know, 6 weeks, and come back and get into preseason and try and lock in that mentality again. Because everybody there, from the manager, his, you know, demeanor in post-match interviews, even trying to explain away what's happening, there's a kind of a resignation to what he's saying. It's almost as if, well, there's nothing more I can do. Like, clearly there is something you can do. You can, you know, change your tactics. There were umpteen people in terms of former professionals and current pundits and all that pointing that out yesterday on Twitter, that there's enough you can do to try and alter your tactics. Don't be playing the same high line you would be if Virgil van Dijk was playing at the centre of your defence, because it's not going to work when you've got Nat Phillips and Reece Williams back there. It's little things like that. But I think if they do enough to get through to the quarterfinals of the Champions League, if they do enough to see off Leipzig this week, I mean, that could be the changing of their season. It's a big ask. They do have a 2-0 lead to protect. But if they do get through to the quarterfinals, that might pick up the idea of, who knows, they might go on and win this thing for a second time in 3 years. But more than anything, they need a break. They need to bed in for pre-season. And they need some new faces in there next year too, because that current squad as is, even with the injuries, or even without the injuries, sorry, I should say, if you were to look at their bench week on week compared to Manchester City's, compared to even Manchester United's, which, you know, on occasion can be stronger, and there are others in there too, that they're what they have in reserve isn't near good enough to maintain the level and the pace at which they were playing.
No, it's not. The likes of Trent on the bench, Thiago, Mane suggest that targeting the Champions League is where his head is at now. Although in terms of a break, I mean, the Euros are on. Go play the Euros. And for the South American players, there have been a couple of cancelled games now in March, which need to be made up. So I'm not sure how much of a break anybody gets. But I take the point. They do need to just get away from the place for a couple of weeks. We should kick off the news round. It is, as ever, here on Off the Ball on News Talk, with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. Seamus Coleman, again, absent from the Everton squad this evening. They're playing Chelsea tonight, Rich.
Yeah, this is becoming a bit of a worry. It's the third game in a row that the Republic of Ireland captain has missed. He was facing another late fitness test before today's game. Clearly, he hasn't passed. The 6 o'clock start there at Stamford Bridge. So they're 6 minutes deep into the second half. It is Chelsea 1, Everton 0. Ben Godfrey's own goal on 31 minutes, the difference between the sides there. Chelsea looking to maintain their fantastic record under new manager Thomas Tuchel. Following last week's defeat to Manchester City, West Ham will look to get their Champions League push back on track tonight. David Moyes' side are at home to Leeds from 8 p.m. Before the season, Moyes claimed that a top 10 finish would be an achievement for the Hammers, and he's been asked if he's recalibrated his hopes given their current lofty position.
We're big outsiders for the Champions League because there's lots of teams there, but if you watch the racing at Cheltenham, quite often the big outsiders do well and come good. So I'm hoping that I'm one of those big outsiders and we can shock a few. But I don't think we're kidding MD on that we think that we're in a position to be in that place. But the resilience, the commitment, the determination the players have shown, nothing would surprise me with them. It really wouldn't. But I think at the start I said, if you'd given me top 10 anywhere, I'd have said, thanks very much. It's an incredible season for West Ham. It would show that the progress had been made. And, you know, we don't want to lose the fact that, that you know, making progress is something important. I mean, the position we're in at the moment is an incredible position to be in. I hope we can stay in it and we'll do everything we can to maintain the role we're in.
21 points better off on where they were at this stage last season, David Moyes and West Ham. Quite extraordinary. On the Seamus Coleman thing, Adrian, I mean, it's becoming a really unlucky period for Stephen Kenny, again, on the injury front. James McCarthy suffered a reoccurrence of his groin injury at the weekend. Roy Hodgson said it was pie in the sky talk that he might be back to play for Ireland this month. You have the John Egan situation. He's out injured now for the next 2 months. The Shane Duffy form situation. I mean, throw Coleman in on top of that. Matt Doherty did play for Spurs yesterday. I know this because he got the assist for the Harry Kane wonder goal. With, you know, take it while it's going. And it was a 5-yard pass, but it's an assist. I mean, in a spot of bright news, Dara O'Shea is now playing centre-half for West Brom after being hauled off after 23 minutes early on by Sam Allardyce. And people thought, oh, maybe Dara O'Shea is not his cup of tea. Sam Allardyce now really likes him and has him in at centre-half. And Kieran Clark played as well yesterday. They played against each other. It was a nil-all draw. So that's something I suspect Stephen Kenny was looking at very closely. But in broad terms, I was listening to John Duggan and David Myler, Dan McDonald, Johnny Ward talking about this on Saturday. Stephen Kenny's looking at, you know, the definites for this crucial game against Serbia, and geez, it's far from pretty at the moment.
I, like yourself, hadn't seen the Doherty assist initially, John. I went to seek it out, and I thought, I wonder, like, hopefully, you know, you're trying to hang on to some sort of chink of light, and he really, I don't know if they could not give him the assist for that, because like it was all about the goal. It was an incredible goal. In fact, Roy Keane in the and listen, let's not ever let a news round go past without uttering his name. Was it doing the analysis of it later, and it said that it was such a bad pass that he'd expected Harry Kane to take in a touch, which was obviously his own way of having a little bit of a dig there. But yeah, look, I it's tough times ahead, and also like you listen to a lot of the clubs now are talking about, like you're saying, about the players that are, let's say, injured or whatever, and the threadbare squad that he has. But like a lot of the clubs now are talking about not letting players away at all.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
So what actually happens at international window, regardless of our own parochial issues, and there are many of them, and they're mounting. It'll be just a very interesting place to look at, I think, over the next few months about international football and where the future of it is, because you would understand clubs saying, listen, we're paying your wages, and you can be damned if you think you're going to be taking a 2-week window after coming back from international duty.
Yeah, true. Dermot says, if Jurgen Klopp wasn't such a good egg, you'd swear he'd lost the dressing room with the way the team is playing. That's a good point, actually. It was almost, if it was almost any other manager, you'd say, well, he's clearly lost the dressing room. It's just with Klopp, we presume that can't happen. Patrick O'Dowd, cool head Patrick here. It's time for Klopp to go. He hasn't built a good enough squad. He hasn't won enough in his time there. Oh, come on. Come on now.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Stop now. Stop. Okay, well, I'll stop that now.
I'm going to decline to finish, Patrick. Sorry.
Joe, can I just say on that? Yeah. You know, I was thinking earlier on when Richie was making the point about it. Like, we here wouldn't have deigned even broach this as a conversation. So none of us are suggesting seriously that Jurgen Klopp is going to part ways with Liverpool. Right, that's not a conversation for tonight. But we're now suddenly starting to talk about, will there come a time, which suggests that things, that's the way, the arc of the way these things work.
Yeah.
Another few losses under the belt. I disagree with Richie in terms of the 10 nils. I think, look, he isn't going to get fired no matter what happens this season.
No.
But I think he's certainly edging in that direction the way things are going. Was it somebody texting earlier on to say that he might be the bigger man and sort of walk away?
I was saying that might be the worry for Liverpool fans almost. You know, I don't know. The Klopp, honourable, free-thinking man that he is, could say, you know, I don't want to overstay. I don't want us to fall out, so I'm just going to tearfully wave goodbye. Like, in a not dissimilar way to the Dortmund thing, like, all the fans in the crowd when he said goodbye to Dortmund, and they were like, there was a similar fall-off with Mainz before that. There's kind of a slight track record here of great achievement followed by a decline that he wasn't able to hold. But you think of his goodbye game, and all the Dortmund fans are just in tears, waving goodbye to, like, it's like a breakup. It's like, it's not me, it's not you, it's just we're not right for each other anymore. It's like, I don't want to say goodbye either. I still love you. Like, you could imagine if the cop was full, you know, in 6 months' time, and this thing continued to unravel, it'd be a similar kind of scene, actually. I mean, I don't know. It's really hard to pass any judgment on it because you don't quite know what's going on. Like, that's an interesting point that somebody texted in saying, if it was any other manager, you'd say he'd lost the dressing room.
And that for me is the other big concern between now and the end of the season. Like, you look at Salah on coming off with a half an hour to go on, was it Thursday night?
Yeah.
Not a happy camper. Like, trying to keep, when we're talking about like trying to get them back in a positive, having a positive moment, Joe, before the end of the season, I think that in itself is a big factor, because like players are in poor form. You look at Robertson coming off the pitch the other night with a face like a smack backside on him, and that's the way that's the general look of the players now. Like, I mean, they're after getting beaten by one of the worst teams in the division.
Yeah.
Morale is not high. They're going to be ratty with each other. Salah's going to be ratty with the manager because he's the one who's ultimately getting the curly finger, and like, that's a huge task now as well, to keep them united on that front as well.
Yeah, no, it's true.
On that point, yeah. Actually, on the squad point, I think there would be an acceptance on all parties, be it FSG and Klopp, that they didn't invest when they should have done in the summer. Like, it's that old adage, like, every team builds when they're, you know, continues to build when they're at their strongest. Like, you keep adding to your squad. And they didn't do that last summer. Now, no circumstance kind of precluded that from happening with the pandemic and the prices that everybody was looking to deal with. But there should have been.
They did sneak in with Thiago and Jota, which certainly Jota was a big success. They were unfortunate he got injured, and Thiago's taking a lot of the blame at the moment. But like, you can't say he's a bad signing.
But look at the back. Like, there was a few club press conferences when the injury started to mount up at centre back where they said, well, we could have signed X centre back during the summer, but he would have been playing third or fourth choice. Mm. Now, ultimately, when you look at them signing Quebec, who was looked at in the summer on the last day of the January transfer window, that suggests that there's a bit of a disconnect between what the transfer committee, as it is there at Anfield, and what Klopp were saying. They're at odds. Mm. Not severely so, I wouldn't suggest, but there's definitely a problem there that would need to be addressed between them getting the players that he wants when he wants them, as opposed to judging when the best value is. And getting players in at the back, like, they knew Joel Matip was injury prone last summer. They knew that they only had three fit centre halves at the best of times going into this season. So
didn't one of them, Richie? You know, was it Matip or Gomez? One of them got injured because that was what they were saying at the press conferences. We're not going to buy anybody. And then lo and behold, shock and surprise to everybody, was either Gomez or Matip, who was just coming back, got injured again. And it was at that point they went, oh crap.
Yeah. Like, there should have been a fourth centre half brought in. The fact that they were looking at Quebec and brought him in then on the last day of the January transfer window suggests that there is an issue there at boardroom level, and they probably will have to invest heavily this summer. Yeah. Whether they're able to is another story.
It sure is another story. We'll come to your news of another RFU contract in a second. But all this week, we are giving away a €300 Aldi voucher to celebrate Mother's Day, which is on Sunday, everyone. It's on Sunday. No excuses. It's all with thanks to Aldi. Yeah.
Oh, Christ.
There you go. All with thanks to Aldi, who are making a donation to Barnardo's every time you buy one of their Mother's Day cards. They're hoping to raise $20,000 this year, which is great. Aldi have 145 stores nationwide with everything you need to say thanks to your mother. To be in with a chance of winning the €300 voucher, just tell us which Judy has two sons who've won 10 tennis Grand Slams between them, across singles and doubles. So I'm sure you all know that. Text your name and answer to 53106 for 30 cent, and we'll contact the winner after the show. All with thanks to Aldi. Treat your mum to something special this Mother's Day. So Keith Earls, one more year.
Yeah, he signed a new one-year contract, a central contract with the IRFU. The 33-year-old is going to remain at Munster, so until at least the end of next season. Earls is Ireland's second top try scorer of all time, and he's the fourth player over 30 in the last week to gain a new central contract. Earls is joined in the Ireland squad this week by Jacob Stockdale, having missed the first three matches of this season's Six Nations through injury. The Ulster back is included for Sunday's game away to Scotland. He replaces Munster's Shane Daly. Meanwhile, Josh van der Fleer must complete the return to play protocols this week. Scotland, for their part, have handed a first senior call-up to the American-born Rufus McLean,
who's
included in their 34-man squad, absolutely, for Sunday's game with Ireland. Exeter's Sam Skinner and Edinburgh's Nick Haining have also been recalled by head coach Gregor Townsend. Xander Fagerson and Adam Hastings are both absent for the game at Murrayfield due to suspension. Richie Gray misses out with a head injury.
Keith Wood on the way just after 8 o'clock, looking back on the Pro 14 action as well. So this Ireland-Qatar business, they've reached some kind of compromise.
Yeah, the Republic of Ireland squad facing two away trips inside a week later this month. I'm sure that'll go well. It's been decided to swap their home and away friendly matches with Qatar. The 2022 World Cup hosts were placed in Ireland's qualifying group for friendlies with each of the sides involved. The Gulf state will be based in the Hungarian city of Debrecen, meaning Stephen Kenny's side must travel there for a match on March 30th. Ireland's campaign opens away to Serbia on March 24th before Luxembourg visit Dublin 3 days later.
There's a lot of moments, Adrian, where if you... got a glimpse of them many years ago into the future without explanation, you'd wonder what the hell is going on. I think Ireland playing Qatar in Hungary kind of counts too, in front of no fans. What's happening here?
What's going on in the background? It makes no sense. What's the logic?
I guess they both want to avoid that longer trek. So they said, okay, instead of a mammoth journey to Qatar, we'll go to Hungary and then we'll go to Hungary again. And instead of forcing you to come all the way to Dublin, I guess that's the thinking.
Call it off. No fans at it. Yeah. I mean, look, it'll be a box office game somewhere, won't it? Like, they're going to make... It's ludicrous. I don't understand it. Like, I mean, can they come forth and give us the logic? Is there, like, such a big financial package in the back end that we...
Just think it's... Qatar were promised they'd be part of a World Cup qualifying group with 2022 coming into focus, and we're the lucky winners of that one. So I think that's the long and short of it. Sam Bennett, meanwhile, Rich?
Yeah, he surrendered the leader's yellow jersey after today's second stage of the Paris-Nice. He placed fifth in today's sprint finish. But lack of bonus points for the Waterford riders saw the race go to Michael Matthews, the race lead, that is, go to Michael Matthews. Cease Ball won today's stage. Bennett is 4 seconds adrift of Matthews going into tomorrow's 14-kilometre individual time trial. And Bennett said he left it too late today to pick up a back-to-back win.
I was waiting, and I think we thought it was further after the last corner. But I just stayed too relaxed coming into the last corner. I should have moved up a lot more, and then I thought Michael was going to open it up. But I think he had to use so much energy to come back that he's already used up all his energy for one day, and then I waited too long to go. It was my own mistake. But the team were fantastic again.
Rich, hopefully some good news on Caelan Doris.
Yeah, Leinster optimistic that Doris could feature in this season's Pro 14 final. The number 8 has been out of action since his withdrawal from the Ireland squad ahead of their opening Six Nations game. Doris saw a neurologist in Birmingham, having complained of concussive symptoms prior to the game with Wales. And speaking today, Leinster coach, Stuart Lancaster, has been giving an update on his fitness.
Yeah, so he's doing like a progressive return to contact. So he's been doing like non-contact training, in and out of sessions, just to build up confidence, I guess. So he's on the road to recovery, and I think, you know, we're hopeful that he'll get back playing again soon.
When you say soon, do you have a date penciled in? Would you see him featuring the next month, or would it be beyond that?
No, within the next month, yeah.
That's good. Such a young man. Whenever you hear struggles like he's been having, you get worried. So it's good to see he's been given the all clear. Adrian Barry, I mean, there are many reasons. Like, you're an unusual character, I would say. One of them being you're a big fan of the Pro 14. You're one of these people who says, oh, no, I like the Pro 14 is a great, great bit of stuff. So the final, I mean, last year it was Leinster-Ulster, Leinster's third win in a row, and it was a bit of a damp squib, rested some frontline players even for the final. And now March 27th, which unfortunately for the organisers is a week after Six Nations concludes. So a week after the England game and a week before Heineken Champions Cup knockout stages. So yet again, and I do have sympathy for the organisers, you'll have Leinster Munster, but I don't think there's any way in hell that the Irish frontline players can play 4 weeks on the bench. So it's going to be a final with frontliners missing.
Yeah, it's not what you want, clearly, from the final statement of the Bleeding Obvious. But it's funny because, like, even looking at the Interpros over the weekend, where so many of the internationals weren't there, there's so many interesting storylines. It's not what you would want from the final is the problem. Like, if it was the semi-final, you'd make your peace. You just need to have your big guns there for that. And so that would be slightly disappointing. But it'll be even, Stephen, in terms of they'll both be missing frontline players. So at least from a competitive point of view, it'll be even on that front. But I know we were having you were watching Messi over on whatever it was, Sky the weekend, while I was looking at Dennis Irwin over on the other channel and happily doing that show.
Yeah, for people going, what are you talking about? When he says Messi, he means Jordan Spieth. And when he says Dennis Irwin, he means Ross Byrne. Don't ask. It made sense at the time. Somebody texts in to say, will you guys be slating Bryson Sledgehammer Drive as besmirching the great game of golf or treating it like the quality blast of entertainment it was, from Pat, says Pat. Ah, listen, it was quality all the way, Pat. Last night was awesome. It was awesome. It was just so good. And you know what? Lee Westwood made the point afterwards. Here's 47-year-old Lee Westwood, not a huge hitter, and he's able to compete with DeChambeau. And I think 5 of the world's top 10 are all, they're more iron players than drivers. I think maybe like the ills of golf have been a little overplayed in terms of the distance is ruining it. But as for Bryson, did you watch this? No?
Yeah.
That was great stuff. Him and Westwood basically match play for about 3 hours. It was great.
It was disappointing that Westwood didn't. There was a couple that had slipped past him that he didn't get it back to, over the last 3 or 4 holes, get it back to both on 11 under par or something like that. I know he squeezed him on the final hole, and geez, he had chicken on the bone, Joe, on the 18th. There was a lot of chicken on that bone.
Golf commentators have to stop saying there's a bit of chicken left on that bone.
Oh, it's my favourite golf expression of all time. They never stop saying it. It's brilliant. It's outstanding. That natty red cardigan at the end as well. I mean, that's something to forget about the, you know, $7.5 million or whatever it was he would have won for.
That's an Arnold Palmer cardigan,
beautiful,
which Bryson pointed out was extra large, and it still barely fit me.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other doubt. Was it the conditions, Joe? Was that the, because he was saying that he looked at the weather forecast and for the Sunday, Westwood, and thought, oh, it might be a bit tricky and that might suit me. Is that what leveled it a bit? Or
possibly.
Or can a Westwood compete with a DeChambeau over that over a course like that?
No, I think he can, even conditions good or bad. On a course like that, he definitely can. He definitely can. And, you know, I just think he meant the windier conditions suited, you know, Westwood from miserable, is it Sheffield? I think he's from Sheffield, as opposed to Californian Bryson. So I think that was his
thinking.
Oh, it is Nottingham. He's got a Nottingham Forest little yardage book, actually, Lee Westwood.
I presume you were willing him on, Joe, were you?
Yeah. But I mean, like, either way, the whole thing, I was like, Golf Weekly can't lose here.
No.
Was the,
Bryson DeChambeau is 27, by the way, as well.
Yeah.
I had to check that last night when it was said, like, what? I mean, I know, look, professional sports people, and they get a lot of crap, and as he has done over the last few months, but, geez, we have to remember he's 27.
Hmm. You thought he was older or younger?
Young man.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Yeah, no, listen, he's turned himself around. It's unbelievable. So, Rich, I have time for one last story.
Yeah, police in Scotland made 28 arrests and issued 7 fixed penalty fines as thousands of Rangers fans celebrated winning the Scottish Premiership title yesterday. Large numbers of supporters broke coronavirus regulations by gathering outside of Ibrox and in Glasgow's St George's Square as well. Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon tweeted that the crowds were infuriating and disgraceful and could delay the end of lockdown. 2-0 Chelsea, by the way, a Jorginho penalty has doubled the lead of Thomas Tuchel's side at home to Everton. And they also had a goal disallowed in between for handball by VAR by Kai Havertz. But Chelsea 2, Everton 0 is the latest score, 21 minutes to play at the Bridge.
Okay, very good. Richie, thank you.
Cheers.
Adrian Barry, cheers.
Thanks, lad.
Mark Lawrenson next.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.